What costs money?
It's the bandwidth, basically.
This is our website.
I'm Valentina Powers. I'm an interactive producer. During breaking news stories is when most people log into our streams online.
Now let's take a look.
The more requests we get, the more we have to pay.
Help us to be there for you when you need us the most. Support podcasts by becoming a member now. Pledge online at WNYC.org.
WNYC podcasts are supported by Holy Name Hospital in Teaneck, New Jersey, providing comprehensive centers in cardiovascular services, interventional radiology, and cancer care. More information at www.holyname.org.
Julia Child pretty much single-handedly introduced fine French cooking to homes all across America. At a time when instant cake mixes and cheese whiz were pantry staples, Julia's Mastering the Art of French Cooking popularized shallots, stocks, and sauces. My Life in France, written by Julia with Alex Prudhomme, tells the story of Julia's finding her life's work. The book is published by Alfred A. Knopf, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Alex and Judith Jones, who edited the original cookbook, to my show today. Hello.
Hello. Hi there.
Now, Judith, you not just that book, but how many of Julia's books did you edit?
I did all but one, and that particular one, she had a writer, and there were reasons why we didn't, but Julia always said, she's always been my editor.
And that's this book as well.
Yep.
You're related to Julia through marriage, aren't you, Alex?
That's right. Julia's husband, Paul, was my great uncle. He was actually the twin brother of my grandfather, Charles Child. So I was related by marriage, and Julia was my great aunt.
Well, but that's a fairly distant relative. Did you know her at all?
I did. I grew up here in New York City, and she and Paul were based in Cambridge, Mass., but they were frequently here to do food-related and book-related things, and then we would visit them in Cambridge over Thanksgiving or Christmas, and we would see each other up in Maine, where we all have a house during the summers. So I was lucky enough to spend quite a bit of time with her, and the funny thing is, when I was a kid, I would watch her on our little black-and-white television, and then I'd see her in our kitchen. And when you're a child, you don't think much of that. But it was when I was a teenager that I started to realize that, oh, there's really something special about Julia.
She also comes across as the kind of person who'd be like an Auntie Mame. Was she that sort?
Well, yes and no. I think Julia projected this image of great humor and a sort of a freewheeling style on television, which people really responded to. But underneath that, she was a very disciplined cook, and she knew her information very well. We tell the story in the book about how she made so much homemade mayonnaise and hollandaise at home, trying to get the recipe just right, that at times she would have to throw it out. And she said, "This is a crime, but I just can't eat any more of this stuff." And so the point is that despite her great humor, I think that one of the keys to her success was just how serious she was about food and what a hard worker she was.
And Judith, go ahead.
And Paul was very much an enabler in that sense. And I can remember his always saying to her, "Submit it to the test, Julie." And indeed, she would put up charts of charcuteries and which sausage tasted right and which needed this and that. And so it was a real partnership in that way.
And that goes against the popular image of her as the woman who dropped the chicken during a TV show, which she told me.
The truth is, she did drop the chicken, just as you or I would drop a chicken. We might not.
And that's what made her human, actually.
Yeah.
You spent, you actually met her before you met her, didn't you? You got the manuscript first?
Yes, and they were still in Europe. In fact, they were posted to Oslo then. So the first 3 months, it was all through correspondence.
And why would she have sent it to you? Was she sending it to a lot of publishers?
Oh, no. The whole story is in this book, and it's a long and complicated and a very tense story, because I think at one point they gave up. It was supposed to be Houghton Mifflin, and Avis DeVoto, Bernard DeVoto's widow, was acting as really the scout and agent for it. And then Houghton Mifflin finally turned it down because it wasn't what the little woman wanted today. She wanted, you know, quick and easy. And they just couldn't persuade them to hone it down to that kind of a book. Of course, it would have destroyed it.
We're talking about total efficiency in the kitchen, as many shortcuts as possible. And mm-hmm. this is saying, no, take your time.
Yep.
That little extra effort is what makes it extra special.
That's right.
So do you remember the first time that you met her?
Oh, I definitely do, because they walked into my office and Paul was with her. And I was quite taken aback. I mean, she was big. And for women then, women today are so much taller.
But she's tall even by, she was yeah. tall even by yeah. today's standards.
Yeah. And, you know, she just looked like that, an American girl from Smith College, a little bit gawky, and Paul was a good head smaller. But the minute you made contact, you were dealing with somebody who was real. And we just took off from there.
But didn't you have the same reservations Houghton Mifflin had?
No, I did not. It was a book I had been looking for and yearning for and couldn't find. And it's as though somebody put a great gift in my lap. And all I said was, if I love it so much, there must be other people like me.
And everyone at Knopf went along with you?
They
Good question.
I got some people to back me. And I think Alfred felt he loved food. He was dubious, but I think he thought, well, let her take her chance. Why not?
Weren't you also concerned that the portions were small for Americans and
yes,
there wasn't enough red meat in there?
Yeah, and a lot of the men in the office felt, not a quarter of a pound of meat for the average man. So we had to negotiate on that.
And then there's the matter of the title. Didn't Alfred Knopf say something about that title? That
he said,
wasn't
when
promising?
I told him what the final title was, he said, well, I'll eat my hat if that title sells. And as somebody put it in one of the reviews, bon appetit! A lot of hats.
When you met her, Alex, she was already a famous person. So how much did she talk about the early years and the struggling to get started?
She didn't talk about it that much. She always talked about France in a sort of very romantic way. I mean, as we say in the in Julia's introduction, that you know these were among the most important years of her life. It was the time. This was 1948 when they arrived. Julia was 36 years old. Didn't speak French. Didn't know how to cook. Arrives in France a little intimidated. But almost immediately falls in love with France and its food and has a sort of personal flowering while she's there. And so I think for the rest of her life, the experience of living in France and learning about food and finding her raison d'etre was an engine that kept her going. So I, you know, having grown up with her, I always heard about France in the most glowing terms. And then, of course, they had a house in Provence, and we used to go visit them. And it was, you know, idyllic. And so, you know, Julia, in the course of doing this book, I discovered it wasn't always wine and roses. It was a hard road. And in fact, you know, Paris in 1948. Was cold, and they turned the gas off for days on end, and there was smog, and it was...
It was still suffering the effects
of
the war. It
was really
yes.
both those post-war years, and I thought that was fascinating to me, is to see how meager their life was in those early days.
But she was a late bloomer, and wasn't Paul a major factor in her actually becoming the Julia Child that we
knew? I think very much so, because he was cosmopolitan, he knew France, French, loved good food and good wine, and I think Julia wanted to just be the good wife, too, and make him wonderful meals. But I think the fact that she was as lacking in knowledge as she was made her a very good writer, because she put herself in the place of you and me and anyone starting off to try to do this good food.
She didn't make assumptions that we knew and we knew that.
No. And she took you by the hand, and whoops, now it may curdle at this point, and if it does, how you save it. And
she was endlessly curious. I mean, one of the things I loved about spending time with Julia is she was always sort of poking the world to see what would happen, whether that was in her recipes or going to the farmer's market or getting lunch. You know, every mm-hmm. encounter with the world, Julia was pushing the envelope to see how much information she could get out of a given situation.
We're talking about Julia Child's last book, My Life in France, written with Alex Prudhomme, published by Knopf, her publisher for all but one of her cookbooks, and her editor for all of those books. Judith Jones is here as well. Her first cooking class was actually in Los Angeles, wasn't it?
Yes, she took a class from two ladies, and they taught her how to make pancakes. And this was sort of in preparation to being a new wife to Paul. They married in 1946, right after the war.
Well, they had both served in the military, hadn't they?
They met in
the
OSS.
I teased her about being an ex-spy, and she used to say,
not exactly. Yeah, she was a clerk typist. But they did meet in the OSS, which was the precursor to the CIA, and they met in Ceylon, now called Sri Lanka. So they met under fairly exotic circumstances. Paul was 10 years older than Julia, as Judith was saying, a sophisticated man of the world. Julia considered herself rather unformed and lacking in sophistication. And I think, just to get back to your earlier question, that Paul, it was a sort of a Pygmalion story. Paul was her primary audience, and she used to call him guinea pig number one because she was always trying new recipes out on him. And I think she really relied on him for so many things. He helped her with her writing. He helped illustrate some of her books. He took a lot of the photographs. Once she became a television personality, he was a key person behind the scenes, whether it was, you know, washing out the bowls and dishes backstage or helping to set up a shot.
But she may have been less traveled, but not less ambitious than we might expect. She obviously wanted to please him. The first meal she made for him was brains poached in wine. Not exactly.
I was surprised at that, too.
Well, one of the many questions I have for her, outstanding, is why that?
Yes. And how did it turn out?
Yeah. It turned out terribly, apparently.
So she wasn't a natural cook. Because there are some people who can just look at a recipe and make mm-hmm. it into something better than...
Or don't even need a recipe, yeah. Just look at the ingredients.
Well, I think to a certain extent, Julia's collaborator, Simone Beck, who was called Simca, who was a French woman, who Julia originally started teaching classes with and then wrote the first two masterings with, she was a more intuitive cook, is my impression. And Julia was a more... sort of methodical cook.
Simca grew up with it, the way so many French women did in those days anyway.
Didn't you also go to Paris around that time?
Yes, it's very curious because I was there at just about the same years that Paul and Julia were, and our lives were very parallel because I had that wonderful awakening to French food. But we never met. It's not until that moment.
We tend to think all American expats were hanging out together.
Yep. Yeah,
but it wasn't the case. You also had a marriage in which food was a something that mm-hmm. connected the two of you.
Yes, it was a very binding force. Yeah.
So, did you talk about that with Julia? The similarities, compare notes.
You know, Julia was an interesting person because she was not very personal about herself and analyzing herself or her motives and things like that. In fact, when I first brought up the idea of doing a book like this, she said, "Oh no, you know, I don't want to write about myself." And I said, "But you could just write about the years in Paris, and maybe, I know, you could make it sort of an homage to Paul." This is pretty sneaky of me, and that caught fire because she wanted to.
You describe Paris as a wonderful place. Stayed there longer than you expected to. Some Americans went there and just felt that the French were awful to them. So what made for a good experience for someone like Julia or you and a bad experience for somebody else?
Well, we were talking about that. I was talking with Alex. I think it was food, because if you enjoyed the act of cooking, believe me, the French, certainly in those days, put their life into it. And you would go to market twice a day because there were no refrigerators. And you'd get to talk to the fishmonger and the charcutier and get ideas and recipes and exchanges. And the French were very giving on that level. They could be critical on other levels.
Well, as long as you were interested in what they were doing, then it was nice. It was only when they thought you were the ugly American
That's right, they had problems with you.
We're talking about Julia Child, actually, talking about her last book, written with the help of Alex Prudhomme, called My Life in France, published by Knopf. And with us is not only Alex Prudhomme, but also Judith Jones, who was Julia's editor throughout all of her career. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Judith Jones, who was Julia Child's editor for pretty much all of her writing career, was the editor of the very first book, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, and everything except one book through the most recent one, called My Life in France, written with the help of Alex Prudhomme, and published, as were pretty much all the books, by Knopf. Both Judith Jones and Alex Prudhomme are here. And Alex, how did you come to collaborate on this?
Well, Julia had been talking about doing a book like this for almost as long as I can remember. And she used to call it the France book. And she'd say, oh, I'm working on the France book. And clearly it was an important thing for her to talk about those formative years. But the book never appeared. And I had my own writing career, and I would visit her once a year or so, and she retired to California. And December of 2003, I was out visiting her, and I said, well, Julia, how's the France book coming? And she said, well, it's not so great. At this point, she was 91, and her health was up and down. And I said, well, I'm here to help you. And she said, well, dearie, maybe we ought to give it a try. And I had for years been offering to help her with one thing or another, and she was a very self-reliant person and had always very politely declined. But this time she surprised me by saying yes. And so I had to rush out and buy a pen and a notebook. And the next day we sort of sat down and sketched out her ideas. And I thought she had actually been putting words on the page. And in fact, she hadn't been. She'd been writing it, but it had been in her head. And she opened a drawer in her desk, and there was this enormous trove of letters that she and Paul had written to my grandparents from Paris and Marseille to my grandparents in Pennsylvania while they were living in France in the 40s and 50s. And along with that were clippings of things that Julia had written or had been written about her, some of Paul's photographs, and then, of course, all of Julia's books. And so we began doing interviews, and I would ask her about specific stories or big swatches of time, and the conversation would begin. And often she couldn't remember things that happened the day before, but she could remember with crystal clarity the things that happened 50 years ago. And it was a very interesting how memory works that way.
And she remembered one meal that changed her life. What was it?
Well, it was her very first meal in France, November 3rd, 1948. She and Paul took the SS America from New York to Le Havre through a terrible hurricane and arrived on a foggy morning and drove in their big blue Buick to Paris, and along the way pulled off in Rouen and went to a restaurant called La Couronne, which is the oldest restaurant in France, built in 1345. And there Paul, in his fluent French, ordered sole meuniere with oysters and a salade verte for lunch. And it was a transporting experience for Julia.
Well, some people could have that meal and not get it, but obviously she got it.
Also, from the very moment, and I love the way she describes this, from the very moment that the ship pulled in and she looked at those Frenchmen, she had all thought that Frenchmen were going to be sort of effete and like Adolphe Monjou, little twirling mustaches, and she looked at these big hunks of stevedores, and she fell in love with the French.
That's right, yeah.
French man.
She said, without even realizing it, I was already falling in love.
Can you remember the first meal she cooked for you?
I don't remember the first meal, but I certainly remember plenty of very good meals. I never had a bad meal with her, I have to say that.
Is it intimidating? I know sometimes when chefs, when you go to a French, to a chef's house, or a chef comes to dinner at your house, it can be kind of scary.
Well, not for me, because she was family, and not only that, but I come from, my mother's an excellent cook, and so was my grandmother, and I come from a family where food is very important. But Julia did make it fun. I mean, she was the one who taught me to eat asparagus with my fingers and how to make lace cookies. And she was also the first person who ever made pumpkin soup and served it in the pumpkin. I thought that was pretty neat.
Did she ever cook American stuff? Meatloaf?
Did she? Oh, sure, yeah. She loved to have a hamburger. And
she loved corned beef hash right from the can.
Bacon and eggs in the morning, yeah.
But really, the French markets were a major part of her education, she says. Mm-hmm.
She said that learning to shop in the French way was a major life lesson for her. And what that means is, unlike America, where you go into a supermarket and you grab the nearest piece of beef wrapped in plastic and take it to the cash register, when you go shopping in France, you have to go in and you have to talk to the meat vendor and ask him about the various cuts and which piece he thinks is best and how to prepare it. And so a transaction that takes 2 minutes in America probably takes a half an hour in France. But it was that process that she loved. She loved people and communication and the whole giving and taking of information. She found very congenial.
And that's still the case, even though we have much better sources of food nowadays in New York. I was in France last summer and I remember going to a market in Burgundy and thinking, why can't we have something like this in the United States? It's still a much richer food culture.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to some of the better French markets when you were living there?
Oh, yes.
Did you have similar experiences?
And living in different neighborhoods. And I remember one French woman told me, you must always walk straight through the market, just looking, both sides, and then buy, because then you could have that comparison in your head. And I still try to do that. But you see beautiful little morels or little baby white asparagus, and you think, maybe you don't want to risk it, because on the way back it'll be gone. Well, but the French would do it.
Julia also seems to get very adventurous. She starts eating things she never would have eaten in the past.
Snails, yeah.
And then
wild boar.
So yeah. She enrolled at L'École du Cordon Bleu, which I assume was a major commitment. What did she think she was going to do with that knowledge?
I don't think she knew it originally. I think what happened was that she did fall in love with the French food literally on that first day in country. And her love only deepened with time. And
although she did not get along with the owner.
Yes, the evil Madame Brassard, who was the owner of the Cordon Bleu. Mm-hmm. But I think she loved the food so much that she wanted to learn how to make it herself. And then once she was in the school, she was mentored by Chef Max Bougnard, who was a wonderful character, who took a real shine to Julia. And she was in a class with 11 former servicemen, U.S. servicemen, and she was by far the most serious cook. And Bougnard understood this and took her around to his favorite little wine store and meat purveyors. And she learned not only how to cook from him, but I think also how to teach. He was a great showman. And she ultimately saw herself as a cooking teacher. And the book was one aspect of that. Television was another aspect of it. But right after the Cordon Bleu, she and Simca Beck and Loisette Bertol started a little cooking school out of her apartment in Paris.
How did she meet them?
She met them through a French gastronomic society and then through various social events. There was a famous party when the host had put Simca and Julia together, knowing that they were food mad, as she liked to say. And they hit it off, and they decided to open a little cooking school.
Hadn't they also plan to publish a cookbook in the United States?
That's right. Simca and Loisette had been working on a little cookbook for the American market without really understanding the American market. And they had a collaborator who was an American freelance writer who disappeared in the midst of all this. And they rather sheepishly asked Julia if perhaps she wouldn't mind helping them put this book together. And
they didn't know what they were getting
They didn't know what
for.
They were doing. Because she immediately sort of took charge and took over the book and redirected it entirely. And there's a funny moment in our book where she describes how she actually doesn't like anything that they've done so far and that she's going to completely rewrite this thing. But that they're really onto something in because there wasn't a book like this.
Well, what did she understand was necessary? What had they done wrong?
Well, Julia was very practical and very methodical in her working. And I think that Simca and Loisette's initial book was, as she described it, just a jumble of recipes without any real direction. And Julia wanted to have the book read in the way that the lessons that were taught in their little cooking school, which is for the enthusiastic but uninitiated cook. And that meant really describing what was happening step by step, what ingredients you would need when, what utensils to use. And so she basically put the brakes on all these recipes that they were developing and took a much more methodical approach.
Judith, do you think sometimes it takes an outsider to understand a national cuisine? Diane Kennedy has written some of the best books on Mexican cooking. Mm-hmm. Julia Child, really, these books could be cooked from in France, couldn't they? And
yes,
be
but
perfectly
you know,
appreciated?
Julia never went over in France because I don't think the French like an American woman telling them how to cook. I think that's part of it is being the kind, as you learn, taking notes on what you're learning and understanding that you have to translate that to just the little neophyte cook who's never boiled water. And I think Julia understood that because that was the old Julia.
Well, she was a compulsive tester, as you said.
Yeah, and a teacher.
But what about you? When you got the manuscript, did you try to cook from it as well to see if it was working?
Oh, exactly. I had it for a whole month, and I'd made several dishes, but I remember all the points on a bœuf bourguignon about drying the meat, about what you brown it in, every single detail. And we sat down, and we were in France again. We had the best bœuf bourguignon. And there wasn't a book that told me that.
Now, why? There were other books that, other cookbooks about French cooking, and
but,
I'm sure some of them written by very sophisticated writers.
But they didn't understand that you have to translate, and that the emphasis in those days was on how many recipes you could get in a book. So they had to be short. You're not going to tell people all those details I started on bœuf bourguignon because you'd go on for half an hour. And indeed, these recipes did go on for several pages. But you know, once you'd done them once, you'd learned how to do it. You could do it with veal, with pork, with chicken. It was a real learning experience, and that's what I was lacking.
And she was also teaching you how to think about cooking and
yes.
saying, don't rigidly follow these recipes. There is a mm-hmm. certain attitude that you should bring to them.
Yeah, judgment.
My guests are Judith Jones, who was Julia Child's editor for all but one of her books, and that includes the last book Julia Child wrote called My Life in France, written with the help of her grandnephew, Alex Prudhomme, and published by Knopf, as were all the books but that one. One of the things that makes this story so wonderful is that it's about a person finding her calling late in life, and then once she figures it out, really just going to town with it. Mm-hmm. And what did she think about all the years that before she finally got to the point where she understood who Julia Child was?
Well, I this is a fascinating aspect of the book for me. I mean, her first book, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, wasn't published till Julia was 49 years old, and people tend to forget that. And as Judith mentioned earlier, that there were a lot of ups and downs before that book was published. It took them 9 years to get it written and finally published by Knopf. And I think Julia saw that in retrospect as useful time where she really learned her material. Before she went to France, she called herself a butterfly type of a person, meaning that she was a very social and liked to play tennis and golf, but wasn't particularly serious. But once she reached Paris and fell in love with the food, she was, you know, as focused as a laser beam. It was really remarkable and how serious she got and how quickly she got serious. And at any rate, I asked her about that, those formative years, and I think in looking back on it, she felt it was very important. It was the hardening of the steel, really.
She also was willing to be flexible. She put some recipes with pressure cookers in.
She was always open to.
And later she told me that it was all right to use bread makers as long as you use them to do the initial mixing.
And yes, that was one of the things I didn't agree with her on.
But still, I just seemed to me she was open to other things. Instead, even though she was a real traditionalist, I remember having a conversation with her and Jacques Pepin, and I said, I think Julia is more French than Jacques, and they both laughed and agreed.
Yeah. But she would try all the new things. I remember when the food processor came along. She was just fascinated by it. But she would only use it for the things that worked, and some didn't work. And suddenly you could make canals in 10 minutes instead of 3 hours.
Because you didn't have to chop by
hand. You didn't have to put it through a sieve and squeeze it through cloths and goodness knows what.
Well, how did the television thing happen, and what effect did it have on her collaborators back in France?
Well, it began in 1962 when Julia and Paul were living in Cambridge, Mass., and there was a local PBS station just starting up, WGBH, and they had a book show, and a woman they had worked with in the OSS worked at the station and acted as an intermediary and asked Julia to come on the show. But being Julia, she didn't just show up with her book. She showed up with a bowl and a whisk and a hot plate
and
some eggs, and she proceeded to make an omelet on the show. And in fact, she was so focused on making the omelet that she forgot to mention her book. But the good news was that the guy who was interviewing her had actually read the book and was asked intelligent questions. And the next week, they got something like 25 letters from their, you know, everybody who was watching the show, pretty much.
More than they'd ever gotten.
Yeah. They didn't remember her name, but they liked that big woman cooking on TV, and they wanted more of that. And so PBS said, well, now, here's something. How about a cooking show on TV? And there had been cooking shows with Jim Beard and Dionne Lucas at each had shows. Neither of which had really taken off.
Well, a lot of it has to do with personality.
Yeah.
And she was natural.
And she made us feel that if she could do it, we could do it.
We could do it. And more of it, we wanted to do it. And it was okay to say, yum, yum, num, num. Hmm.
She also had this improvisational style that really was so charming. Once saw her on David Letterman's show when the stove didn't work, and she made a cheeseburger with a blowtorch. Now, what happened when Knopf realized that they had a TV personality on their hands? And it just had to change the whole focus publishing.
Sales zoomed. But even before she was on television, we did print that book twice before Christmas. So there were, it doesn't sound like a lot, but there were a good 20,000 in print. But then it just took off.
And then everybody else was out there wanting to do a food show as well.
Yep.
But I think that she really did have a unique style, and there's nobody has come along. A few people have tried to imitate her, but nobody's really come along.
I think the secret to her success was actually this combination of humor and easygoingness with this deep seriousness that was under there, and that she really knew her stuff. Because when you watch her cooking, especially in those early shows, even though she's looking at the wrong camera and knocking into things and sweating, you watch her hands and you watch what she's doing with the food, and she's a true expert. And she makes it look like so much fun that you literally want to walk through this TV screen and sit down next to her and start cooking because it looks so delicious, and she's just having a ball. She just got better with time.
What happened when Paul died?
Well, that was very sad, obviously. Paul was 10 years older than she was, and in 1977, he suffered a series of little strokes and had what Julia called the dwindles. He eventually died in 1994.
So he was very old when he died.
He was 92 years old, yeah. Mm. And Julia, even when he was basically completely out of it and was in a nursing home, Julia would call him every day, even from France. She would get up at 2 in the morning and call him. And it was very touching, and she was really devoted to him. And I think his death was extremely sad for her.
Yeah. Yeah.
This didn't really pigeonhole you, Judith, because you wound up also editing some of the most famous writers that Knopp has published, people like John Updike. Mm-hmm. Was there a time when you thought you might just be doing cookbooks?
No. In fact, I wasn't. I went there as the French editor, working with French translations. And, I didn't have any credentials. Well, nobody did for being a cookbook editor. So it just happened, and I kept the balance because I think it's better if you do a lot of things. And
well, a book like this is memoir. It's not a cookbook.
Yeah.
And so it's closer to what you normally do.
Yeah.
What about you, Alex? You've written other things in collaboration and on your own. Was this a unique experience, or is this part of...
Well, I'm basically a hard news kind of a guy. I've been writing in magazines for 18 years and have done a number of books, most of which are sort of business-oriented. And this was a really nice change of pace from all that. Not only was I getting to tell a terrific story about a fascinating person, but also it's about a time that I find to be deeply interesting. You know, the post-war years in Europe during the Cold War, during McCarthy, Julia learning ancient wisdom from the French, bringing it back. I always joke that, you know, Paul's job in France with the U.S. Information Service was to basically sell America to the French. And then Julia made it her job later on when she brought her knowledge back to sell France to the Americans.
And we've never recovered.
I might also say that I think this was an extremely creative job. I don't think most nonfiction writers could do it. Well, most writers couldn't do it because it took a very keen ear to know exactly what was Julia's voice and to pick up on her expressions and her... So that it's so beautifully woven that you can't really tell the difference between what maybe Julia wrote down and what you had to improvise out of letters and interviews.
And the book we're talking about is Julia Child's last book, called My Life in France, written with the help of Alex Prudhomme, published by Knopf. Alex has been here, and so has Judith Jones, who was Julia Child's editor throughout all of her career. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast of the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. This was just one of the show's segments. You can hear everything we do on demand at WNYC.org. Check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.